and I think I'm gonna make living good. Well, you know I'm pretty about you, baby, but you don't.
Yank Rachel and his Tennessee Jug Busters, and I'm Gonna Get Up in the Morning from his release Mandolin Blues. Plus Lizzie Washington, fine St. Louis girl, gave us Lord Have Mercy Blues from 1927. Time for one last track. We're gonna hear from Sonny Terry and his buddy Brownie McGee. Great bluesman at Newport Folk Festival, 1976. My Baby Done Changed the Lock on the Door. Sonny and Brownie here on WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Blues. This is the mucilage that ties, you might say, jazz and folk music together, and we have two titans of the blues. This is a cliche, but true. Here then, Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry.
Turn the lock on the door. Well, she done changed. Yeah, she done turn the lock on the door. Well, she says, "Sonny, tell that key you got. Woo! Won't fit that lock no more. Thanks, Lord." You know, I went home last night, about 10:30. I tried to get the key in the lock, and I couldn't get it in, cause she done changed. Well, she done changed the lock on the door. Well, she said, "That key you got, son, and Terry, yes, won't fit that lock no more." Well, you know, I might take a little slow walk around to my window, peep in and see what can I see. I walk around to my window to see what I can see. You know, she was kissing my best friend, and I know it won't mean, cause she done changed. Well, she done changed the lock on the door.
Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Check my math and follow along. 88.3 over 100 is not 0.883. We exponentiate. Euler's number raised to not 0.883 is 2.418. Multiply by 1,000 to result 2,418. Add 401, result 2,819, multiply 25, 5 by 9 is 45. 5 by 1 is 5, and 4 is 9. 5 by 8 is 40. 5 by 2 is 10, and 4 is 14. 20 by 9 is 180. 20 by 1 is 20, and 10 is 30. 20 by 8 is 160. 20 by 2 is 40, and 10 is 50. Sum 70,475. Add 404. 70879. Multiply 11. Result 779669. Add 20. 779,689. Divide 10. Result 7796.89. Square root 88.3 WRCT.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
You are tuning into WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. I'm Kate, and on this episode of Forbes Ave, we will be exploring dialectics, or two seemingly opposing ideas that exist at once. I would like to introduce you to our guest today, Jaden Singh, a wonderful fine artist, computer science student at CMU who absolutely makes the most of getting outdoors. Here, we have a lot of questions for you today. Last year, you biked all the way home from Pittsburgh to DC during fall break. Can you tell us a little bit about what that experience was like?
That experience was really awesome. Probably one of my favorite memories from last year. And that was even, it's mid-October, of course, so the leaves are going off and you're biking through southern Pennsylvania and northern Maryland in these elevations where the leaves are just beautiful. You got the rolling mountains in the background and this really beautiful river. It was raining for a good portion of it, and that didn't even detract too much, which I think speaks to how much I enjoyed the trail. It was my first time biking over 15 miles, I think, and it was an 80-mile day, 40 miles, 150 because I had to catch up, and then 70 to take me home. And I think that was a really cool part about it is I had no idea what was going to happen going into it, got on the trail, figured out, all right, this is pretty cool, and then just went the distance. And yeah, it was really lovely.
So you'd consider yourself a spontaneous person?
I think so. I sometimes surround myself with people who are even more spontaneous that make me think that maybe I'm not. But I think if you ask a lot of people that know me, they'd say so, judging by how I spend my weekends.
Yeah, like I know you mentioned that Wyoming is a second home, and those people from Wyoming are those people that you work in with in the Park Service. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and that community, I guess it grew a lot last summer because the first two summers I was working there with this youth group, this youth corps that was working in Grand Teton National Park. And so I knew a lot of the kids. I didn't really know so many of the adults, and we were like sort of adjacent to the Park Service, but I didn't get to know too many of the true like professional crew people. But last summer I was with the adult crew, got to know a lot of people who have worked in the Park Service for a long time, and they taught me a lot. It was my first time spending all my time with people that much older than me, because my crew, my specific crew, I mean, we worked building trails, and they divide, I think, 20 to 25 people into maybe four or five groups of 4 to 6 people. I had a 6-person crew, and I was the youngest, and I think my boss was 38, and most people who work in trails are mid-20s, late-20s. I think that would be the median. And so that's such a different perspective. They're in a different stage of life, and you get a lot of maturity. But also really the cool thing about trails is with the youth crew and then also with the National Park Service is that you spend so much time with them. You live with them for about a month out in the woods. So you'll get to know them whether you want to or not, and you'll be cooking together and cleaning together and having fun together, unless you tuck yourself away in your tent the whole time. But no one does that. Well, no one on my crew really did that. And I think with a youth crew, now that I've known some of those people for 3 years, because I went back and I got to see a couple of them, those are really very important relationships to me. They've helped me out a lot, because my first 2 summers there, I came there knowing no one nowhere to stay a lot of the time, just no structure. And I mean, they didn't even always have structure, but they knew people and they were always willing to help me. And I really appreciated that, and I still try and keep in touch. And in general, they're also just really interesting people. Because I'm from D.C., and I don't feel like I left home too much coming here to Pittsburgh. And being a student at Carnegie Mellon, it's a similar environment to my high school, which is very academic. Jackson Hole, Wyoming in general, because I've been at this point around most of the state. And a lot of the people there, it's the same thing with the adult crew. It's just a different perspective, and it's a perspective I appreciate a lot. It's sometimes more spontaneous. And yeah, I really do love those people.
Yeah. Do you know, would you mind elaborating on what you kind of did during the trails? Did you clean up trails? Did you help rescue people? Or what did that look like? What was a typical day?
Yeah, a typical day is difficult. But early in the season, I think there was a typical day. But the way it worked is there's a couple different types of things you do. There's basic maintenance. That's what they trusted when I was on the youth crew. We just always did basic maintenance, and that is digging drains. Drains, if you are on a trail, particularly managed by a public land service, so like the Forest Service, the Park Service, and I don't really pay attention, there might be drains in Shenley too. It's just when it rains, you need a way to get water off the trail, because if water stays on the trail, then it'll trench out the trail. If you been on a couple trails, you've probably seen it happen, and then people walk off the trail, and then basically we want people to stay on the trail, and we want the trail to be nice to walk on, so we dig drains to get the water off the trail. The second thing in basic maintenance, it's very intuitive. It's getting plants that grow onto the trail off the trail. So you just go out there with clippers and maybe a handsaw, take out, in Grand Teton, we target things with woody stems. There's a lot of smaller weeds, but We can try and brush those all we want. They're going to grow back in maybe a couple weeks. So that isn't much use. With the adult crew, it gets a lot more interesting, because our biggest task early season is log out. Because over the winter, particularly early season, there's a lot of thunderstorms, big wind storms. You just get a lot of trees that fall on the trails. And first of all, that's a nuisance for people. Second of all, it's a real big nuisance for people on horses. So we just go out there with one or two chainsaws, and we just basically hike down a trail. You don't know if you're going to see a log. Sometimes you can guess. Like if you're in an area with a fall or a fire recently, those trees are not, they're going to fall over with a really, insubstantial storm. Like it doesn't take much to knock them over. So sometimes you'll go out and you'll be taking out a tree off the trail like every 10 minutes of walking. And sometimes it'll be 1 hour, 2 hours. And those days are really lovely because, especially on some trails, you go out there 10 or 15 miles hiking. You just enjoy the park. Maybe there's three trees. But you take the chainsaw for a walk, basically. It's really fun. And also, you get to run a chainsaw. I'm pretty new to that. But everyone likes to run a saw. Just quickly, I guess the final category, which can actually take a huge amount of your time, is you'll get put on a project. So building a bridge, repairing a bridge, fixing up a barn was something I did. There's a lot of just small culverts, bridges. I think bridges are the main things. And then there's a lot of rock structures. We install rock structures. We repair rock structures. So a lot of dry stone masonry and very quick and dirty wood carpentry is how I describe it. It's built to work, not to look beautiful most of the time.
Interesting. This is so interesting too, because you're doing a lot of working with your hands. How does that compare to, I know you're a computer science student at CMU, so
yeah.
The stereotype is, you know, coding in your basement the whole day. How do you find that balance with this interest going outdoors, and what kind of drew you into this work that you do with the National Park Service and hiking and everything? Was it a response to that, or, yeah.
I think, I mean, as far as I balance them, I don't really. From September through April, I'm, well, a computer science and fine art major, and then May through August, I'm a trail worker, and those don't intersect so much. And honestly, I mean, I always look for ways to bring them together, but at least so far, I'm not quite there. And there are a lot of positions in the National Park Service that involve like geospatial mapping or taking measurements, running studies on in the Tetons, like glaciers, bear populations, wolf populations, elk movement, deer movement, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of things that would involve perhaps computer science skills, but I'm not there. Like, trail work has nothing to do with computer science. I was thinking about this over the summer. I actually don't think I touched a computer for 3 months over the summer.
Wow.
With the exception, okay, I did in the office just to sign on for work, like to get my ID card working. I did have to, but those were the office PCs. I don't want to count that. Otherwise, no, I certainly didn't bring one. And in Pittsburgh, I am not a trail worker. I go outside a lot and I do a lot of that stuff. I have my fun outside, but I'm not a trail worker here.
Speaking of enjoying Pittsburgh, you mentioned that you work in trails, but not here. I know you mentioned that you like to do rock climbing. Are there any good spots in Pittsburgh, or when do you find the time to climb?
As far as good spots in Pittsburgh go, in Pittsburgh, I'm mostly a gym climber, so those are indoor. I love Ascend. I go to Ascend Point Breeze quite frequently. For outdoor spots, there's a bridge pillar in Schenley that's interesting climbing. It's really unique because it's a bridge pillar. It's not anything, certainly not anything similar to what I have climbed in Wyoming, which is all granite and like natural fractured rock. The bridge pillar is not that, but it is bolted and it's nice. And there's a couple other spots inside the city that are similar. They're like quarried limestone blocks on old city structures that people are permitted to climb on. As far as finding time goes, it sort of changed. So freshman year, it was almost a priority bar nothing for me that Monday, Wednesday, and then pick one of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I was going to go to the climbing gym. Regardless of my work or whatever. I mean, if something's going to be late, it's going to be late. But last year also, I was more on top of time management than I've been so far this year, which made that work, because this year I've made it less of a priority. And I've also, so last year I only climbed inside. I would go to the gym a lot. I'd also get injured a lot, which kind of sucked. But this year I've been trying to split gym climbing with Schenley, just because I need more outdoor rope climbing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Pittsburgh, it is more interesting. So Ohio Pile is a place I've been to that has okay climbing. And there's a couple state parks. So Ohio Pile State Park, McConnell's Mill State Park has some, again, like interesting climbing. It's not anything like Wyoming, of course. I mean, Wyoming is glacial, alpine, and this is not. But it's, it doesn't make the climbing any less interesting. It is just different. And then Seneca Rocks is somewhere I want to go to a lot. I was there last weekend. I want to go there a lot this year. It's in West Virginia. It's this spectacular, like, spine of sandstone. It just shoots straight out of a mountain. And it is one of the preeminent outdoor climbing spots in, I mean, certainly this whole area. It would be, you'd split it between that, New River Gorge, deeper in West Virginia, and then the Gunks in New York, I think. I mean, unless there's something in Ohio I don't know about. But that area of West Virginia also is just so stunning. It's, you can go there and not climb, have a great time. Or you can go there and climb a lot, and it's, yeah, it's an awesome spot.
Would you say that climbing involves a lot of decision-making or using your head, or are you more instinctual with it?
It, I'd split my answer between the different types. Like in a gym, I'm climbing. In a gym, it's very close to a workout, particularly because I just boulder, which means it's short routes, not involving a rope, and it's not super cognitive because, of course, so people would argue with a lot of things I might say here. It's, I guess, just not compared to some of the outdoor stuff. It's like the way I look at it is I go in there to get stronger and get better at climbing. That's not how everyone would approach bouldering in a gym, but that's sort of how I think about it. In Wyoming, it's a totally different brand. I guess what I would say what I do in Wyoming, just to be clear, is not, it's not within, well, what I do is more, it's for the purpose of mountain ascents, which means that you're frequently traveling a lot lighter and faster. I mean, it's not a controlled setting remotely. So a lot of what it ends up being about is a ton of decision making because you're balancing a lot of different risk factors. And I guess that's the major distinction is like here, what I do is not no risk involved. In Wyoming, I'm climbing, and I'd also want to say that what I climb in Wyoming is not difficult physically or grade-wise from a technical perspective because it is just for the purpose of an ascent. So it's the easiest path to the top is what I'm looking for most of the time, not always, which basically is a lot of risk management because one of the biggest things is storms. Getting caught in a thunderstorm in the Alpine can be pretty harrowing. You want to be wary of rockfall, especially, I mean, compared to a gym, your holds they're going to be there. On a mountain, the rock in the Tetons is pretty good, but I've had a hold flake on me. Kind of sucks. So you have to be wary of that. And there's just also like, because I'm going light and fast, frequently I don't carry a rope. So it just gets to your head in a different way.
I'm Kate Smiggy, and on this episode of Forbes Ave, we will be exploring dialectics with our very special guest, Jaden Singh. Have you ever fallen before from one of the rocks or like from a significant height? Or is that something that worries you, or do you not really have any fear?
It totally worries me. I've fallen on a top rope route, but that's on a rope. I've fallen on a rope before, I guess. That's the first answer. Falling unroped, you can only do so many times. I think I did once in this little crag outside DC, and I fell like 5 feet. In Wyoming, most of the time, if I fall, I would probably die. And yeah, that's in my head, but it's very much something you can get used to. That might surprise people because my first time up a very moderate route on this mountain called the Middle Teton, I mean, essentially a walk up, but I got up there and just the heights started to get to me, sitting on this perfectly secure rock on the top of something. And I was just looking, and you have the awareness maybe that 15 feet at that point, because it really was not very technical, 15 feet one way or another way is this massive drop. But over time, just being in that environment more and more and more, I think you just get more comfortable with it. And that doesn't really mean your decision-making should change because risk is risk. If you're a better climber, of course, that's a factor. But yeah, I'd say it's definitely in my head a lot.
Do you manage these risks also in your fine arts experience? I know you do a lot of interesting paintings of nature when you're making those decisions with your brushwork or just using different colors. Is that applicable from the risk management from climbing, or do you see it as a completely separate entity?
I think completely separate. I don't paint to be super deliberate about it usually, so.
Cool. Do you want to speak a little bit more about painting and just kind of why you feel so compelled to do it? Because I know you've felt compelled to do climbing and computer science, but what drew you into painting and how have you kept it in your life this long? Because I feel like a lot of people kind of give that up as they get older.
This has a pretty happy answer that ties in with other things, because I only learned to paint mountains. Same with drawing, mostly. The same way I wanted to climb them, I wanted to paint them. And when I'm painting in my free time, it's still that same thing. So for class, I'll paint other stuff. But yeah, I'd say that it's a pretty simple reasoning there.
In addition to being a great artist and computer science student and experienced outdoorsman, you seem pretty involved on campus. I mean, you talk about your involvement with the tartan and some other things. What draws you into that? Do you take everything to the max when you do it, or is that how you kind of go into things?
Yeah, people have described me that way. but the tartan is because I write sports for the tartan, and I think I've written some news and I've done some other things because, I mean, it's interesting to write about stuff that you think I find. But I started doing it and still do it because I like to write about sports, particularly the NBA and NFL, which I think, like, during the school year, that's sort of my comfort habit, is putting on an NFL game or an NBA game. NBA is awesome. They got games every single night, mostly after mid-October. I'm still waiting for mid-October. But that's the story with the tartan. I do push for buggy. Honestly, though, these are things, it's funny the way you phrased it, probably things I have not taken to much extremes at all. I've kind of just, it was my, you know, freshman feeler process, seeing what I kind of liked, what I didn't. You and I did salsa for 3 weeks. That was part of that.
Yeah.
And the tartan also, in particular, I just like hanging around the people. Usually they're very interesting. I mean, it translates to the things they write. They have interesting opinions, but nice group to be around.
What kind of made you want to explore computer science? I know you expressed to me that you had an interest as a kid in that, and kind of what was the driving force behind that fear? Like, oh my God, I got to make a living type thing, or love for it? And then why have you pursued it this far? Because I know you've been talking a lot about nature, but you see it doesn't like tie into that. Is your nature like going into nature and escape from it?
I don't think I really started getting interested in it until early high school. The first thing that comes to mind was, again, sports, actually, because I think it started with football. I'm the type of sports fan that likes to kind of overanalyze things, like dig up little metrics, little patterns. You could throw me in the sports analytics crowd, I suppose. I like to build my own metrics sometimes, but basically, I picked up some programming in R.
Data.
Yeah, data science primary language. It probably does other stuff, but I don't know. It happened to be what people liked to use to model the NFL. And I picked it up, and I think what I was trying to do specifically was, I was a big fan, not so much anymore, of the Tennessee Titans back when I was doing this. And I was just, I believe, trying to figure out ways to show that Derrick Henry was messing up the Titans offense and they needed to make Ryan Tannehill pass more. So I had all these splits. I got into, like, because it requires a couple different disciplines within programming, I guess. Like, there's some API stuff. There was some, like, light regression analysis, maybe. Light on both of these, really. I was picking it up off this, like, random guy from Michigan's YouTube tutorial. And it was, I had a lot of fun doing it. And I'd had some experience programming before, but it was this, like, fundamentals class in C. It wasn't very fun. This was a lot more fun. And you made colorful graphics. So I guess that was a bit more experience. And then I also think later in high school, I decided that I could be pretty good at it. and could have a good career in it. And it also, there's a precedent in my family and with myself for studying and researching math. And that's kind of the side of computer science that I thought maybe I could take further. Not so much, I mean, data science is awesome and I love it, but the theoretical side, which I truly don't know very much about, I think in the future would be something I'm interested in pursuing.
Yeah, that's really cool. What do you think about your classes now? Do they fulfill you in that way? Because I know a lot of the foundations of computer science that first year is a lot of, or tell us about that.
Sort of. The classes I'm in right now are classes where I don't really know enough about the field to know how helpful they're going to be. To be specific, 213 and 150 for computer science. Both of them are really cool classes. I can say every computer science class I've taken here, I've learned a lot, and I found them quite well structured in terms of content and just interesting to go through. Like, the assignments are engaging. That said, I am not so totally sure where they're going to apply later in my life, partially because I don't know where I'm going to apply myself. So that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. In contrast, what do you think about the art class structures?
Oh, the art class structures.
How does the lack of structure in an art class, do you think that's good or bad? Or has that helped you express yourself more, you think?
The lack of structure. Well, I think part of the reason I am in BXA, or why I'm still doing art, is because I just wanted to be technically better at it, having not really ever taken technical art classes. So I guess I could have expected classes like risk agency failure and critical studies, which are just mostly, or just, they are not technical classes, basically.
They're more like theory-based.
It's, yeah, theory sort of exercises in thinking about art. They weren't really, I enjoyed them, particularly risk agency failure. I had a good time in that class, for sure. But I think of them more as like a side piece. Mm-hmm. The studio classes like photography, drawing, painting, those are the ones that I think I came for and I really appreciate more.
What are you photographing now, or what are you painting currently?
What I'm painting right now is solely in my painting class, this uncanny still life. It's the project we're working on now. It's going better than I thought because I am not a very experienced oil painter, and it's an oil painting. And it's probably the first oil painting that is actually kind of turning out how I thought it might. So I'm glad about that. That's what I'm painting right now. Photography-wise, painting in the past, it's all about place. Our assignment happens to be called, in photography class, a sense of place. So I went out 2 weeks ago. I'll probably go back at some point, maybe this week, to this place called Dead Man's Hollow. It's this city park outside of Pittsburgh. It's a pretty small park. It's got a couple trails running through it. It's surrounding these old factory ruins. I think it was a pipe factory right on the Monongahela River, just outside McKeesport. It's like 15 miles down the bike trail. And there's some really, I mean, it's just pretty graffiti to photograph, partially. It's a beautiful environment to walk around in. I've been there a couple times. Usually I'm just going down the bike trail and it's on the right, and I think, oh, this is a nice place for a water break. Stop there, maybe make a call. Just wander around. There's this cool tunnel, goes out into the river, and it's got this nice little creek, a couple benches, just a really nice hangout spot. That's what I've been photographing. Oh, and I guess last weekend when I was out in West Virginia, I got a couple nice photos. There's this camping spot on top of this sandstone pillar that we were staying at, and we woke up in a cloud Sunday morning, which totally not what I intended, because I was there with a friend, and I'd been there a couple times. It's sort of a comfort spot for me and another friend from high school. And I was hoping to show him the view from there, because the view from there is so, so cool. But we got up there after sunset, couldn't see anything. Woke up in a cloud, couldn't see anything. So I couldn't show them, but the formations are really cool. It's cool to just be sleeping up there, I think. And I got some kind of sick photos of the mist.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people on, I guess, pursuing a lot of different things that might not seem related? Sometimes I think it seems impossible to be able to do things that don't necessarily relate and still enjoy all of them.
Well, honestly, delete social media. See, I'd say that because as part of a general removing distractions, because I think it's kind of just time management. For me, it's time management because they're all things I love and I want to do all of them, and it just comes down to time. So when I can be undistracted, when I can be focused, is kind of when I can do all these things the best.
Thank you for tuning into WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. I'm Kate Smiggy, and on this episode of Forbes Ave, we will be exploring dialectics, or two seemingly opposed ideas that exist at once, with our very special guest, Jaden Singh. Okay, Jaden, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for talking today. And stay tuned for more on Forbes Ave.
Thanks for having me. Reach the app.
So, if you're outside of our coverage area, remember, you can listen to WRCT online. Live streaming available at www.wrct.org. WRCT Pittsburgh. You have no excuse not to listen.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful when Mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. I wanted a better relationship with Dad, so I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
¿Qué pachuca, Holgerio?
¿Cree que lo que dices no es nada correcto?
¿Debo de seguir en el reventón?
Debes de buscar a la patilla adecuada. Comete unos tacos de canasta a mi cuadra y seguídete por ocho hasta la madrugada.
Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán. Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán. Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán. Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán. Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán. Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán. Agárrate una nave para reventar. La fiesta es en la Roma o es en Coyoacán.
Ingratos ojos míos no me dejan en paz. Cada vez que te miro te quiero más y más. Con esos ojos míos no sé qué voy a hacer. Si tú no me comprendes me vas a enloquecer. Ellos tienen la culpa de mi grande ilusión. Sin verte te recuerdo con todo el corazón. Cuando te estoy mirando de amor sufro por ti. Ingratos ojos míos, ¿por qué serán así? Condenar, porque por culpa de ellos no te podré olvidar. Cuando te estoy mirando de amor sufro por ti. Ingratos ojos míos, ¿por qué serán así?
Salir de aquí, de encontrar algún lugar. Hey, Pittsburgh, this is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
Did you know that Lyme disease is the most prevalent tick-borne illness, with about 220,000 new cases occurring each year? Believe it or not, you can test negative for Lyme and still be infected. Many victims of Lyme report never seeing a bullseye rash, and it can be very difficult to diagnose because it mimics other illnesses, such as multiple sclerosis, ALS, and Alzheimer's. To learn more, go to www.LymeDiseaseAssociation.org.
Tuning in. This is an experiment with time on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM over the airwaves in the city of Pittsburgh, streaming online to the world up on WRCT.org. And Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead died this week, and just got to take a good chunk of the show to pay tribute to Phil. He was a really big influence on my musical consciousness, how I listen to music, what I expect out of music, and that whole concept of, you know, searching from the sound comes directly from Phil. So I'm going to play a performance of Dark Star from June 10th, 1973, which I think is some of my favorite moments of Phil Lesh's playing. Has got a cool break where there's actually like a bass solo for Phil, which I don't even think is necessarily the best part, but like the interplay between the band and Phil's approach to the bass. I just remember hearing this, you know, when I was 16, 17 years old, and just so wildly different from anything I had heard on in rock music up to that point. So rest in peace, Phil. Thanks for all the contributions that you've made to, you know, my musical consciousness and so many others out there in the world.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hello, we are on Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh. I'm Riona Duncan, and I have a guest here. So I've got Elizabeth Dietrich, who is a PhD student in literary and cultural studies. So one of your main things is studying early modern theater. So I wanted to start us off with a silly question. So what is your favorite Shakespearean insult?
There are some that are straight up insults, like Queen Margaret calling Richard III a toad, saying he's unfit for any place but hell, right? These are kind of straightforward, but I like the ones that are kind of shade in a conversation, sort of like the line, "I do desire that we may be better strangers," which is from As You Like It, a very sort of funny, a lot of humor woven into that particular play. At one point in Hamlet, Polonius says to Hamlet that he's going to take his leave, and Hamlet says, that there is no thing that he would more willingly part with than Polonius's company. So these are actually, I think, my favorites, are the sort of sly, situational, conversational insults.
So it's less you egg and more, you know, contextually, that is really brutal.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
Let's take it back to more things you have done than random questions. But you've actually spent a while like working in professional theater companies. So can you tell me a little about what you did and what it was like?
Yeah, I've worked at a couple of professional theater companies. Haven't had the privilege of working with any in Pittsburgh yet. But I worked with the Michigan Shakespeare Festival, which is in Michigan, surprisingly, perhaps. And a professional theater in Chicago that is now closed called the American Theater Company. With the Michigan Shakespeare Festival, I had a double role as both a dramaturg and a company manager. And then in Chicago, I was in the education department. So a bit of a different sort of thing, less about putting the plays on and more about the outreach endeavors that that particular theater did.
Before we go any further, I know a lot of people have asked me what a dramaturg is as an English student, and I don't really know. So can you kind of tell me what that's like?
Yeah. So my first answer is it kind of depends on not only the theater, but the play. It's a very flexible role. My professor of dramaturgy at my undergraduate institution said on the first day of dramaturgy class that the dramaturg is the smartest person in the room. Which is, of course, no shade to actors, directors, and all kinds of other brilliant people. But I think what he was going for is the dramaturg sees a picture that is sort of bigger and deeper than the others involved who might be focused on staging the play, on enacting one of the characters, or one of these sort of more focused roles. So in my capacity as a dramaturg for the Michigan Shakespeare Festival, I did do a little bit of research, but a lot of that for that particular festival was also done by the directors. So I would occasionally look up sort of random questions that the actors might have. I remember doing a deep dive for the actress playing Viola in Twelfth Night, and she was sort of stuck on one of her lines. So she asked me, what does Viola mean when she says that her sister, or she's sort of impersonating Cesario, so she's talking about herself, but she's sort of in the third person, that this woman died of a green and yellow melancholy. So I did this sort of deep dive for this actress into early modern humors and bile, and we really got to sort of dig into, you know, is this a metaphorical sickness or a real sickness? So these kind of deep dive questions. But I also did a lot of promotional